We've got some really fun interviews today. I can't wait to introduce you to Sarah Blacker or Renee Chavarro or Brian Geiger. They're coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before we get into this show, we're going to go over a very serious topic. Right now, a young man is missing from Fluvanna County, Virginia, and I'm on the line with Robert Lee Howrahan.
Howrahan, yes.
Howrahan's wife, Tara. Thank you for talking with me today. I know it can't be easy for you with everything going on.
Absolutely not.
I learned through the internet that Rob was missing and saw some Facebook pages going by that this Fluvanna man was being searched for, and of course, you know, naturally I wanted to reach out and help, so I appreciate that you're talking with me.
Of course, we want to do anything we can to help him come home.
Can you go over the events of the day that he went missing and kind of lead us step by step so we can follow this with you?
The only thing we knew, he left going to work like any normal day. He was last seen on Route 53 in Fluvanna. And that's basically all we know. No one has heard from him, no friends, no family, myself, and no one has seen my car that he, of course, was driving. It's just like he's dropped off the face of the earth.
What was that day? The 8th of April?
Yes, ma'am.
And which direction on 53?
He was near Cunningham's store. It was the last place he was seen.
And does anyone know if it was going toward Charlottesville or not?
Yes, going toward Charlottesville.
Do you know, was the car parked at Cunningham?
No. An eyewitness, he was basically driving, or someone was driving the car in front of them.
And so they recognized the car because it has...
Yeah, because of the Tara May license plate. It's a very recognizable plate to, you know, to remember.
All right, so tell us the details of the car, please.
It's a 2004 white Chevy Cavalier, two-door. It has, of course, the Tara May license plates. It's spelled T-A-R-A space M-A-E. The car does have a Winnie the Pooh decal on the back glass, along with an IBEW sticker. It does have a sunroof.
Okay.
And that it does have some damage to the front part of the car where he had hit a deer. We hadn't had a chance to get it repaired.
Yeah. Okay. So be looking for a white Chevy Cavalier?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We can only imagine what's going through your mind right now. Can you share a little bit about what you've been going through for the past, it's been over a week
now. Complete torture. My husband was my whole world, and my little girls, too. We have a daughter that misses her daddy terribly, and I know he would never leave us of his own free will. So it's just complete torture.
Okay. I can only imagine, and I think I would feel the very same way if this was happening to me. So I'm glad that we can reach out and get the word out for you.
And we greatly, greatly appreciate any help that anybody can give us right now.
Okay. Now, you live out in kind of like the middle of nowhere in Fluvanna County. You're not near Lake Monticello, correct?
No. We are out in the country.
All right. So if we were to place you, you're somewhere between the town of Palmyra and... What's on the other side of
By
you?
By Fork Union.
By Fork Union?
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing from the people at work?
No. His work does not know anything either. And they are definitely trying to help, of course, anything they can do. They've got signs posted up near the Capitol where he worked. They're being very supportive as well. Everybody is. And it's just so appreciated.
What is his job?
He works for actually the state of Virginia. He was an electrician there, the Department of General Services.
At the Capitol building in Richmond?
Near the Capitol, yeah. Okay. Right in the general area, yes.
But what about Rob's family?
His parents, of course, are beside themselves, and he has a brother that's in a Marine, and he's been coming down here trying his best to help look for him as well. So he, of course, is beside himself.
Okay.
Everyone is just not understanding it right now because, I mean, his family was everything. Rob loved us. I mean, he would never just walk away.
All right.
So we're just very concerned.
A natural thought is any problems in the house?
None.
Nothing like that?
No. Absolutely not.
Any, like, thing going on the internet that he may have developed a relationship?
Anybody that knows my husband, the man didn't even know how to turn a computer on.
That's sad to hear, but it's also sweet.
Yeah.
So your thought is that he's definitely out there somewhere and not of his own volition?
Exactly.
Okay. And
he does have a heart condition that he has to have medication for on a daily basis that is here in this house, and that is my biggest and biggest concern.
Okay. What does Rob look like?
He is about 5'8", and he weighs about 250 pounds. He has dirty blonde hair, blue eyes. He does have like a beard and a mustache.
Okay.
When he left the house, he was wearing blue pants and a gray, like a light gray shirt with like a pocket.
Like a t-shirt?
Yes.
Okay.
And, of course, work boots.
Okay. What's his build like?
He had, you know, a nice size, like, shoulders.
Okay.
And a belly.
Okay.
God love him. And that's about it, really, that I can really think of.
Does anything really distinguish Rob from other people that we should take notice of?
Well, if I was going to say that, it would be a beautiful smile.
He does have a beautiful smile. I agree. Do you need a minute?
I'm okay.
Okay. How about his accent? Does he sound like he comes from Fluvanna?
No, he was born and raised in New York, and then they moved down here when he was about 15. He's got a deep voice. You know, he's got like kind of a, you know, a deep, manly voice. His friends, they would definitely know what I mean when I say he has a laugh that's one of a kind. But yeah, he's got a really kind of a deep, deep voice.
Any nicknames for Rob that he might recognize?
Some of his friends called him Powerhand, but no, everybody's called him Rob.
We don't know if he's concussed and has memory loss or anything like that.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, little triggers help.
Yeah.
So should he be found?
His mom always called him Robbie.
Okay. All right. Anything he absolutely loves to do?
Be with his daughter. She was his whole world.
Hmm. I can hear her in the background. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Tara.
Yeah.
Aside from being with his daughter, many outdoor activities, any sports?
No, he really wasn't into sports. I mean, if he wasn't at work or hanging with some of his buds, he was always with us, always.
Okay. Do you like to go fishing with friends or anything?
Not really. I mean, we have a pond here on our place. I mean, he'd go down there and chill whenever he wanted to.
Okay. What would you say is Rob's personality?
He was a lot of fun to be around. He was, I made a comment to one of his friends the other day, to know him was to love him, but, I mean, it truly was. He would give you the shirt off his back if you needed it. And he just had the best heart of anybody I've ever known.
Okay.
He was just wonderful.
And what kind of things does he like to do when he's home?
He loved to sit and watch movies. We'd sit down and just watch movies as a family.
Okay.
And the man loved his eggs and cheese. Yeah, my mom said.
Eggs and cheese.
And that was his favorite thing in the world to eat.
Okay.
We used to love to go to Inwood Restaurant. That was our favorite place in the world. We'd go as a family for breakfast.
Where's that?
It's in Gordonsville.
Okay. All right. So if anybody in Gordonsville is listening, he's possibly in that direction too?
Hey, who knows?
I don't know, but it's worth exploring.
And we'd always come back by Walmart on our way home, and because he'd have to buy something for his little girl. She'd have to get a toy, of course. I mean, she was his whole world.
I can imagine, so.
He loved country music, and he loved his Metallica.
Country music and Metallica.
Yes, he did. He loved the Lord.
And
yes,
he loved
baby.
The Lord. That's so sweet. All right, what's your daughter's name?
Melody.
Melody.
Yeah.
Will you tell Melody we're praying for her, okay?
I will do that.
So where can we be looking for Rob? Anywhere in the state? You think we should make this bigger?
Yes. I would like for it to go as far as we can.
Okay.
Because I have no idea what's happened.
Tara, any search parties happening right now?
His friends are doing all they can here locally. And the Lieutenant Wells with Savannah County Sheriff's Office has tried to spread it as far as he can with the FBI, state police. And, you know, I'm so grateful for everything that they're trying to do to try to bring my husband home.
All right. And do you have any help at home right now for yourself?
Oh, yes. My mom has not left my side. I've got outstanding support, and especially my church. They are with me 100%.
And what about your daughter?
Her school has had a counselor been with her, and my church again, of course. And, of course, you know, I'm trying to do what I can, but I'm not in the best shape, so.
Oh, I would imagine not.
You know.
But how is she? How is she handling the situation?
She's an amazing little girl. She's a strong little girl. You don't realize just how strong they are. To be 6 years old, she's amazing. She's amazing. She's still hoping Daddy's going to come home.
Aside from a search party, is there anything else you could want from the community at this time?
Just anything that they, if they see anything regarding the car or my husband, to please notify Lieutenant Wells at the Savannah County Sheriff's Office immediately so we can try and get him home.
Okay. My prayer is that Robert Lee Howerhan will be found alive and well and returned to his family in best condition.
That is all of our prayers.
All right. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me, and we will do our best here on the Wendy Edwards Show, and I know throughout the listening community, to help you find Rob.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Do you have a website set up?
I do have Facebook, but that's strictly on my cell phone. Okay. I don't really have that capability, unfortunately.
Someone has set up a search party through Facebook.
Yeah, of my friends.
Okay, so people can go on Facebook and at least join the search party.
Exactly, yeah.
That way.
I have a lot of amazing friends that are really trying to do everything they can to help my family.
Well, hopefully the entire community is going to do just that.
I pray so.
All right, Tara, thank you so much.
Thank you, Wendy, for all your help.
You're welcome. Okay, friends of the Wendy Edwards Show, oh, man, you know what we need to do. If you're able to help with the search party and be out there looking for Rob, or you just want to keep your eyes out while you're driving on the road, looking through the woods, I know that if it was somebody I love, I would be out there constantly. I wouldn't stop. And I think it's only fair to be as constant for someone else as we would be for ourselves. If you have any information of the whereabouts of Robert Lee Howerhan, 33 years old, last seen on April 8th, a Friday, when he left for work at 6:30 a.m., supposed to be headed to Richmond for his job, but was last seen in the Cunningham area of Route 53 heading towards Charlottesville, according to witnesses. Lieutenant Wells at the Fluvanna County Sheriff's Office is taking calls at 434-589-8211. So give him a call if you have any leads. And we will do our best to keep him in prayer and thought and be looking for him until he is found. I know you understand I had to take this moment to talk with Tara, and hopefully the people who are listening can help to bring her husband home. Coming up, Sarah Blacker on The Wendy Edwards Show.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
Hello?
Hello, I'm trying to reach Sarah Blacker.
This is she. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, and you're on your way to Charlottesville, right?
I am, we're in Virginia. We just missed our exit, though.
But we can expect to see you at the Southern?
Yes, ma'am.
You have a show at the Southern in Charlottesville this evening, and what time?
At 8 p.m. the show starts, so I believe doors are at 7.
Okay, and someone else is sharing the stage with you tonight?
Yep, Katie Costello, she's from L.A., and she sounds awesome, so I'm really excited.
Cool. Do you know what her sound is like?
It's sort of like folky pop. I don't know who I would compare her to. I'm not wildly familiar. I listened to a few songs on her website, and it's kind of dreamy pop.
I think you'll pair her very well.
Yep, should be a good show.
Yeah. One of my questions pertains to what we're doing on the Wendy Edwards Show, which is we're paying it forward. And we're doing that for 6 weeks. Me and my listeners are finding ways to pay it forward in the community and in our families or wherever else. Anything from a small token of kindness to a big gesture. Is there a blessing that someone did for you to pay it forward?
Well, I mean, the most recent one that was a really big blessing was the funding of my new CD, the partial funding through a website called Kickstarter. And I proposed a campaign with different levels of rewards, and the goal was to raise several thousands of dollars to help mix and master and duplicate my new CD. And I raised more than I had hoped and was able to make the album, and there was one person in particular from New Jersey who donated $500.
Wow, very nice.
Couldn't believe it. Yeah, it was amazing. So, you know, people, that was a huge blessing that really helped me bring more music to the different markets and the different people that I meet and play for regularly.
That is so awesome. And so now you're touring with your new CD, correct?
I am.
Now, will this evening be a CD release?
Yes, it is. This whole tour is to promote the release of the new CD. So, tonight and every other show up until next Monday. So,
now the CD is called Come What May?
Yes.
And you have a single called Come What May as well?
One of the singles is Come What May, as well as Knock the Wind. Those are the two, Knock the Wind and When I Was New, and Come What May is sort of the Americana.
Going back to I Pay It Forward, Sarah, what's something you've done to pay it forward, either in the music community or just within your family or just in life?
Well, whenever I can help somebody with any information that I might have about, you know, who to get in touch with, contacts I know, places to play, artists that I believe in who are just getting started, I like to help as much as I possibly can, you know, help get them booked, get people out to the shows, things like that. But I also use my music in music therapy and do that to help out kids who may not be able to speak or may not be able to move their bodies, to provide them a really rewarding musical experience where they can learn and grow within a music setting.
Really? Can you give us an example of a session in music therapy?
Sure. It depends whether it's an individual session or a group session, but typically there's a greeting song, and then a possibly a movement song if there's a high level of energy, then an instrument song, often, you know, songs where people are singing, and then a goodbye song. So that's the cut and dry. Within those songs, there's goals and particular interventions such as songwriting or improvisation, or if somebody needs special support when playing an instrument, you know, we'll provide that support and then reward with the music changing in response to their responses.
Now, what types of responses do you see in children that maybe don't communicate through their voices? What do they do when it comes to expression of music?
A lot of kids, you know, who don't necessarily have words will vocalize or sing along or imitate pitches or learn how to use words and sounds and things like that through repetition, through reinforcement, and through vocalizing in a really rewarding way. But there's also instrumental responses. You know, maybe somebody really likes to move to the music.
Mm-hmm.
But typically when it's goal-oriented, for example, if somebody is trying to learn how to hold a spoon, we may work with them to learn how to hold a mallet and play a drum, which is a little bit more exciting than just sitting there bringing a spoon to your food and then to your mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That sounds like very rewarding work. How did you get into that?
I went to college for it. I've always enjoyed psychology and kids and using music to help people, and it was kind of the perfect marriage of all of that when I discovered the program at Berkeley. And so I studied it for about 5 years and took a board certification exam, and I've been practicing for almost 5 years now.
I have to say, that's a beautiful way to pay it forward, and I'm so glad that you're in the world to do that. Not only sharing your music with us in Charlottesville, but helping kids express themselves is a great thing.
Well, it's pretty fun to watch them grow and really celebrate in a fun and social and, like you said, rewarding experience.
Sarah, would you say that other musicians could do this kind of work?
I think they could. It definitely takes a specific kind of musician. I don't know, I guess intuition and compassion and patience and a strong sense of self-awareness, awareness of others, you know, willingness to accept people for who they are and work with them through using their strengths. Not everybody is cut out to devote themselves to, you know, working with somebody else. You know,
right.
A lot of musicians like to just work with themselves.
And get on the road and just be about getting their tour, getting their CD out.
Yep.
And that's not a bad thing. Everybody has a gift. And if that's your gift to share your words and music with the world, then that's your gift. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But if you can extend your gift to something like what you're doing, all the better.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of fun. So it's awesome to do both.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Of course.
I also wanted to bring up the fact that you're paying it forward with me in a way that I can't thank you enough for. You know that I've been desperate for an intro song for the Wendy Edwards Show.
Well, we're going to have to pick a really good one, so you and I will decide on something real special.
Yeah, and we'll introduce that next week. But for this week, I just wanted to let everybody know that Sarah is awesome and very helpful and absolutely love your music. I love your voice. I think you have such incredible talent when it comes to your vocals. You play an instrument as well, or do you play more than one?
I do. I play guitar and mandolin and ukulele. A little bit of banjo and piano and percussion.
Mainly string instruments, though, and some percussion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mainly string.
Okay. But your voice is just beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And I hope that you'll have a great show at the Southern later on tonight, because people need to hear it, not just on your CD. They can go to your website, sarahblacker.com, and listen to samples of your songs. But I have gone and heard you live in a very intimate setting, and all I can say is, I mean, I got the chills listening.
Well, thank you, Wendy. That's really nice of you to say.
Well, it's very honest of me to say. I don't, like, you know, gush over anybody for no reason. But I really did. I enjoyed that concert that you did in Hingham, Massachusetts, and you had other fellow songwriters and musicians there. It was a really good night, but your vocals are just, I want to say they're haunting in a way, and not in a scary, spooky way, but in a beautiful way.
Well, thank you. Sometimes I don't necessarily feel like they're all me, you know? Like, ever since I started singing, I think it's, I don't know, maybe there's someone else there with me.
Do you feel that when you're on stage? Do you feel that you're sort of a vessel for this muse or whatever it is that's with you?
On a good night, when I get lucky, I do, but some nights I'm just sitting there like, come on, voice, do your thing. But I think everybody has those kind of nights.
There's a TED Talk. There's a lady named Elizabeth who wrote a book. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love, and there's a movie that came out after that.
Ronnie and I have been talking about that our whole tour.
Have you talked about her? Have you talked about her TED Talk?
I have not talked about the TED Talk, but Eat, Pray, Love has been coming up almost every day.
All right.
In some strange way.
Apparently,
I need to see the movie and listen to the TED Talk.
I think so. Did you hear her TED Talk at all?
No, I didn't hear her.
Oh, Sarah. She's what she says in her TED Talk is exactly what you're talking about. And if you don't mind, I'll give you a glimpse of what you'll find when you go listen to it online.
Yeah, please.
Okay. What she mentions is that we all do have these gifts, but they're given from the divine. They're not something that, you know, a lot of people think that they inspire works, when instead works inspire us. And
And
she refers back to, like, the good old days of, like, Leonardo da Vinci and Picasso and people who would not call themselves genius, but would refer to a genius outside of themselves as inspiration for what they've done.
Yep.
And so what you said brings that to the front for me. That sort of just solidifies what Elizabeth said in her TED Talk, that, you know, when it's a good night and you feel that, you really do. You just feel like this comes from someplace other than you, and you're just letting it go.
And then the physiological response you get is your own personal reward. It's like, where did that come from? And wow, this feels amazing.
And it is amazing. It's amazing to be a part of your audience when you have a night like that.
Yep.
So I'm hoping you have that one tonight, because it sounds like you're geared up for it.
Well, I slept about 3 hours last night, so I'm hoping that, you know, sleep aside, all else is flowing.
All right. Well, I hope you get a chance to listen to that TED Talk. It's really inspiring. And, of course,
I'd love to.
I hope my listeners will check that out as well. Actually, you know what? I will do. I'll put it on my Wendy Edwards Facebook page so that people can just link from there and go listen to it, because it's fantastic.
That would be really fantastic. That would be great.
All right. Well, I have to let you go because you've got to get ready for your show.
The rest of us will stay right here and listen to Come What May, the first single off of the new release from Sarah Blacker on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Took a stand, it came and took it all away. Why, Memories are in the air, an emptiness prepared to stay. Come what may, come what may, I will live again. The privacy did secrets keep until you caught me in the act. My sorrow when your words revealed the poison hand upon my back. Come what may, come what may, I will live again. I'd draw on walls, I'd meditate to holy heights. On backyard swings and rooftop rings of Saturday and stars at night. Come what may, come what may, I will live again. Oh, come what may, come what may, set my hands on fire, the world so full. The walls were filled by wrecking balls, and tears came falling too. If every man dies, loses his home, then let these words be.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
Next on the podcast, I'm in the studio with Renee Chavarro of Fluvanna. She is a couponing queen, if I may say so.
Yes, you can say that.
Something that really stood out to me, Renee, was that you have this awesome blog. You help people to save money for their families and or themselves by couponing, and there are other techniques that you share as well.
Yes, it's not just about couponing, but making life changes to save money. There's lots of little things you can do, and it might seem like pennies at first, but it really adds up.
And your blog is called How to Have It All.
I'll let you know when I do. You never know what life will bring you. I mean, that's one of the things that I've learned is you can't plan life. One day it's all together, and the next day it can be you can be thrown for a loop. But learning how to save money and how to keep your budget in order and different things.
Tell me why you do this and pay it forward in this way.
I'll never pay full price for anything. And I kind of just have a knack for knowing how to do that. And mm-hmm. I love sharing it with people. Because the one thing that bothers me is going to a store and seeing people that are really in need, you know, trying to count out their change mm-hmm. to try to make the order. And I sit there and think, well, I have a coupon for that. They could have saved on this. And, you know, they don't know that they could have probably saved at least 50% off their bill.
So you know, are you standing in line biting your tongue? Like
sometimes, and sometimes I'll just give out coupons. You know, if I know that I have a coupon for someone, and I'll hand them out in the store. And it's funny, you know, some people are really happy about that, and others are like looking at me like, there's that crazy coupon lady. Like, what is she doing? Yeah. But I enjoy helping people. I'm a helper person, and that's just my personality.
And you found a strength in couponing, and this is how you can pay it forward to other people.
Yes. Yes.
Which is really a blessing. Part of having this show is to shed a light on ways that people can pay it forward, because I don't want anyone listening to think that they don't have a gift, that they don't have something that they can reach out to other people with. Now, whether it's couponing or it's this podcast that we're doing or it's huge monetary contributions to organizations that are helping millions of people. And then others of us really have what you would call, I guess, a smaller gift, but we're able to share it globally, like through the internet. And really, you know, I just want to focus on the fact that any of us can do something.
And that's another thing about using coupons, because we don't have a lot of money to donate. We don't have extra physical money to give. But with couponing, I can buy products or get products for free and donate them to the food pantries and people that need just health and beauty products, or like MACA will take a lot of the food products we donate there.
Right.
So that's one way. Another way is you can make gift baskets. Like a lot of the schools will have raffles, or some of the other charities will have raffles every year. So you can like make a gift basket and donate it, and then people, you know, bid on those gift baskets. Mm-hmm.
And for a family that's trying to make ends meet, when you can't go out and buy these items to create a gift basket, it's perfect situation where you can, you know, through couponing, put together something that someone else can cherish.
Right.
And money will still go to that baseball team or that organization that they're trying to raise money for.
Yes.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
So I have to ask about the companies putting out these coupons. My first reaction is, wow, they must be losing a lot of money. Do you know anything about that side of it?
Actually, there's very few coupons that are redeemed. So I think the percentage, probably right now, because there's a lot of hype about coupons. There's some shows out there about couponing, TLC, which unfortunately I don't think portrays a real normal couponer.
Well, no, they even call it extreme.
It's very extreme.
But you're not.
That's not what my house looks like.
What would you consider yourself?
Well, I kind of wrote a blog about this earlier this week, because I used to consider myself like an extreme couponer.
Okay.
You know, because I use coupons pretty primarily at almost shopping trip. Although there are some times where I'm just like, I'm too busy. Just go in and buy what you need.
Yeah.
But I would say I generally save about 50 to 80% off our grocery bill every single week. But I don't have like a separate room in my house that's dedicated to a stockpile
or, you know.
And a lot of it is knowing what a good price is, because when you look at the sales ad, just because it's in the ad doesn't mean it's a good price. They might put something in there that's only 10 cents off a normal price, and that's not really what I would consider a sale.
But you have had experience since you're a teenager to know what is a good price
versus what isn't.
Where can people find that kind of information? Does your blog highlight things like that?
I do highlight some of that stuff, but a lot of it is good. You're going to have to do a little work on your own.
Okay.
Because every family buys different products. I'm not really brand specific. On most things, I'm not brand specific. So that's another way that I can save.
Okay.
But even if you are brand specific, just start keeping track of what you pay for products. And over time, over the weeks, you'll see that those prices go up and down. So the goal is to find what the lowest price that product goes. And when it's at that lowest price, that's when you stock up. Because there's a sales cycle, and it usually rotates every 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 4 to 8 weeks.
So it's in a pattern?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do the prices go with the sales cycle in a pattern?
Yeah. Like my dog's food, they use a specific, I have two big dogs that go through a lot of food. And I know that Harris Teeter has that food about every 6 weeks.
Okay.
Buy one, get one free. And it's been that way for over a year now.
Nice.
Pretty you know, it's pretty regular. Now, not every product is going to be that regular where you can go, okay, in 6 weeks, I know it's going to be buy one, get one free. But a lot of it does run. And you'll also see if you compare the sales flyers for each store, like Giant, Food Lion, Harris Teeter, Kroger, and if you set them all out, you would see almost the same products are on sale every week.
Okay.
You know, there might be different prices at each store, but the same general items are going
to
be.
But they have a similar draw because they want to probably outsell each other.
Outsell each other. Yeah. And it also depends on what, so the coupons that came out maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, those items are starting to go on sale. So they kind of go together.
It may be good to hold on to that coupon for a couple of weeks because the sales are, would you say, not going to be that weekend?
It depends.
Okay.
Usually I see about a week or 2 weeks later, those items will be going on sale.
And that's the best time to get out your coupons and go shopping.
Yeah.
Well, you probably have to do that every week, but I'm talking about it like if you first, if you're just starting, you may want to hold on and just watch for those.
Hold them until you see that price drop to that lowest price. So it takes a little work, but once you get to know your prices, and I'm not saying you have to know every single price, but there's every family has specific items that they buy almost every week or every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can like track like 10 items and just know the prices of that, skinless, boneless chicken breast is one thing that we eat a lot of. So I know my buy price is $1.99 a pound. If it's not on sale, it's around $3.99 a pound. So I'm not going to buy it when it's $3.99 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
When it hits $1.99 a pound, then I'm going to buy enough to last me several weeks.
Okay. So. But not to buy another couple of freezers for your basement?
No.
Okay.
No.
So how much is normal? And I consider you normal.
Yeah.
How much would be normal to get if you're stocking up on chicken for your family while it's on sale?
While it's on sale, I'll usually, it just depends on how much chicken you're going to make for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But boneless chicken breasts, they tend to go on sale, I would say, maybe every 4 weeks or so.
Okay.
So if you can
okay.
If you can estimate out how much you would use in that month.
Mm-hmm.
And they freeze nicely. You can, what I do is I package them singly so I can just take out one or two breasts at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You can flash freeze them, put them on a cookie sheet and flash freeze them and then put them in the freezer bags and they won't all clump together.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to take them out. There's a lot of people that are in need of saving money right now. And I know that coupons can help. And you had asked earlier how many people use coupons or how many are redeemed or if, is it going to hurt the manufacturer? I think the current statistic is about, it's like under 5% of coupons from the Sunday paper are actually redeemed. So it's a very low amount. The manufacturer is not going to put out coupons if they're going to be losing money. And the way coupons work is the store actually gets reimbursed from the manufacturer. So that coupon to the store is like money.
Okay, so the store itself is not losing money.
The store is not losing money.
So the manufacturer giving away this product for maybe to get you hooked on using their product?
Exactly.
It's
the promotion. It's for them. It's a promotion for you to get kind of hooked on their product and only want to buy their product.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no concerns about, you know, the manufacturers losing money or whatever, because it is a really low percentage of people that do use coupons.
And like you said, they probably would not be making coupons if they were losing that much money.
Exactly.
Just, I can't see that being a good business move.
Right.
So I asked you that because there are people who feel strongly that people who use coupons are robbing the stores or they're robbing the manufacturer. And I wanted to put that.
That's a downfall to being a couponer, because I think in a couple of ways we're looked at it in a negative light. Or people think, wow, she must be, you know, really needing to save money if she's using a coupon. Well, you know, yeah, I do need to save money. I think everybody needs to save money, but it's not like, you know, something
that's
destitute. Right. Yeah.
But you are smart and you're working on your family budget and you're paying attention to how well you can save money in certain areas so that it can be put toward other things like what?
Well, right now we're working on paying off some of our bills. A lot of the offers are on Facebook right now. Facebook is huge for...
So how do you find a free anything? Do you go to a search engine and type in free stuff?
Well, I would caution against that because there are a lot of offers out there that are just junk.
So how can someone do that safely?
if it's a well-known company, I would go to any company that you use or manufacturer of a product that you like, go to their Facebook page, sign up or like them on Facebook, because there's a lot of promotions going on. And of course, following blogs like mine. I don't always post all the free offers because I'm so busy with working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time to do a lot of that. But there are a lot of blogs out there that do post a lot of the free offers. And you can just follow them.
Okay.
And they'll tell you about them.
Do you link to any of those from your site?
Let's see. There's freestuff.com. They have okay. a lot of offers, obviously, free stuff. Groceryshopforfree.com.
Okay.
She does a lot of free offers.
It would feel a little safer going to your website through a link yeah. that way than just going.
At the bottom of my blog, there's a blog role, and that's all my friends. Those are
okay. people
safe
you
to
trust.
Go to. Yes.
Okay.
I chat with them like every single day. We're like real friends.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said I chat with them every single day, all those people that are listed at the bottom of my blog. So, you know, I trust them completely, whatever they put on their sites.
Great. That's good to know.
Yeah.
How about what you post on your blog? Do you do that weekly?
I post every single day.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's busy. Some of it I schedule.
Okay.
That's one thing with blogging is you can schedule stuff out. But I pretty much every evening after the kids go to bed, I mean, that's my hobby. I love to do it.
And you're helping so many people by that.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that you're paying it forward in this way. And I encourage anybody who's blogging to pay it forward to just continue to do that. And don't think that there's nobody listening or paying attention, because people are. Would you say you've got a pretty good following?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's exciting. It's growing all the time. So it's a lot of fun.
Tell us where to find your website.
It's www. You can find me at www.howtohaveitall.net.
So if someone's interested in having couponing classes, how can they reach you?
On the right side of the blog, there's a contact me button. You're welcome to just click on that and fill out the form, or you can just email me directly. And it's Renee, R-E-N-A-E, at howtohaveitall.net.
Excellent. Contact Renee Shavaro if you're interested in having couponing classes, or just visit her blog at howtohaveitall.net.
I'm like a train, my Lord, I keep on chugging on. You're still not gone from my mind, but I haven't got the
time. I'm Sarah Blacker. I'm a singer-songwriter from Boston, and Wendy Edwards is all about paying it forward. She drives across the country to support art. She puts the message out into the world to be positive and to be honest and use your brain, to use your heart, and to help others. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, your neural pathways will strengthen themselves, because you will get smarter. You will learn about music. You'll learn about art. You'll learn about intelligent thought, and it will change your life so that you become a more positive thinker, too. Positive thought inspires positive event, inspires a positive life. So listen to Wendy, because she's a positive gal.
Tear you apart.
I'm talking with Brian Geiger, who's bringing out the food geek in all of us. I am celebrating paying it forward for the next week. Well, we're in the middle of 6 weeks, so I'm doing my best to pay it forward to other people, and at the same time asking my listeners and my guests to pay it forward in some way as well. Fortunately, you already do pay it forward in your work.
Best.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In this, what I would call, I mean, I realize it's work for you, but it's also a hobby. It's something you're just really enthusiastic about.
It is.
And Renee Shavaro, who was just here, is very enthusiastic about couponing and saving money mm-hmm. and sharing how she does that with the community. And your passion is food and how to prepare it and how to create it.
Yes.
And how to solve problems when it comes to food. Because let's face it, not everybody can be in the kitchen and make a souffle, let's say, or make a pie, or make a cake that comes out anything like it looks in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But you can help someone who's had some problems with baking or cooking in their kitchen find out what the problem is. And give them an opportunity to try it again with a better procedure or better ingredients.
Right.
Is that true?
That is true. There's a couple of there's a few things that help you on the path to being able to cook well. One of those things, and probably the most important, is practice. And that's one of the things that traditionally people have done. One of the other things that help a lot that we're doing a lot better now than we used to is knowledge. Because it traditionally, you know, even as far as 20, 30 years ago, we didn't really know what was going on inside food.
Mm-hmm.
And so people had a lot of ideas of how food worked, which some of them were right and some of them weren't right. But they were given more as, you know, kind of analogies to help you to understand what you're supposed to do in the kitchen. And some of those have been great and some of them not as much. And so now that we're understanding the science of what's happening behind the food better, it's a lot easier to bring that knowledge to bear on cooking problems.
I would go so far as to call you a food buster.
I am nearly a food buster, yes. I don't think my articles are quite as exciting as Mythbusters, but no. I do what I can.
I know, but I guess what I'm getting at is that you really do. You like to just deconstruct a problem and find a solution for it. And that's what you do to pay it forward. You help so many people by what you do.
I do try my best.
Give us some examples of recent things that you've worked on for others.
Okay, so one of the my most recent article, as of the recording, is someone always uses whole spices rather than pre-ground spices, and recipes are invariably for the ground version of the spice. And he wanted to have an idea of what a conversion factor would be for, you know, they say a half teaspoon of ground cumin, for example. So what would that be in whole seeds? And I started to say, well, okay, now what I can do is I can sit down and get some whole cumin, and okay, I can measure out various amounts, grind it up, and see what that turns into, and I can make this great formula and maybe use some physics and some packing problems and all that. And then I realized that it was really not the right direction to approach from. He doesn't really want to know the actual numerical amount. He wants to know how much of the spice to use in his food.
Right.
And for the flavor that the recipe is trying to go for.
Right.
So, and it's different when you're using whole spices because once you grind the spice, it's going to start losing flavor. There's a certain amount of what basically essential oils are what brings flavors to spices, especially the subtle ones.
Okay.
So if you buy pre-ground, that's automatically lost right after the grinding process. It's automatically started losing.
Because the spices dry out?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
While it's in its whole form, it's protected from basically oxidation is the big problem. So the flavors are going to stay a lot longer in whole form than it is ground.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tried to compare a half teaspoon of freshly ground spice versus a half teaspoon of something that's, you know, been in your cabinet ground for 3-4, yeah, I have some spices in there that are at least 40 years old.
Uh-huh.
Then yeah, it's just not going to be the same thing. So instead, what I said is you want to start understanding what the spices that you buy, how those, you know, interact with your food. And it's a good idea to take a look at the ratio of the spices that are being called for. So you can say, I need roughly 3 times as much cumin as I need this and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you can get that basic feel, but there are some times when measurements are a really good idea, and there are some times when measurements are going to hold you back in cooking.
Okay.
And as far as using spices, measurements will hold you back. And so
Because you really are cooking to taste.
Yes.
So the amount of spice depends on your taste.
Your taste and your spice as well, and that whole interaction. And so basically,
I can see that.
Yeah. And the simple form was I gave him permission to go ahead and wing it.
You had some interesting questions a while back about eggs.
Mm-hmm. The eggs are very popular.
So let's talk about eggs. I know are something that a lot of us cook with. Eggs are pretty versatile. And
yes,
personally, I have trouble with eggs sometimes. So I'm interested in what people have written you about.
Well, one of the things I've talked about is basically how to use eggs in cooking. And there are some standard tips that you get when you're baking, especially like a cake or something, which is to use, for example, room temperature eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to know, well, do you really need room temperature eggs?
Because
then
you?
I have to pull them out of the fridge and let them warm up. And the short answer is, as a general rule, yes. And it depends on what it is that you're making.
Why? But
because when you're, let's say if you're making primarily cakes and cookies,
mm-hmm.
And you're using a process called the creaming method.
You're talking about like the sugar and the butter, yep. And then you drop the eggs in.
Yeah. So you take butter, you add sugar to it, you blend that together,
mm-hmm.
And that's called creaming, and then you add the eggs to that. Or the purpose behind creaming is to make little tiny bubbles inside the butter with the sugar.
Okay.
And when you bake that, those bubbles expand. And so if you were to take a muffin and split it apart and a cupcake and split it apart, the bubbles inside the cupcake will be much smaller and more regular than the bubbles inside the muffin, because the muffin is done with baking soda.
Okay.
And that's where those bubbles come. So that's not as regular, whereas if you take sugar and you beat it all in thoroughly into the butter, then you have very small bubbles really evenly distributed into the cake. And so what happens is if you take your if you have your butter and it's not at basically room temperature, so it's soft and squeezable but not melted, if it's too hard, if it's too cold, then you're not going to be able to beat the sugar into it very well.
Okay.
And if it's too warm, then it's not going to hold those bubbles. And so what happens is when you add your eggs to that, if your eggs are too cold, it will harden up the butter. And you don't want that to happen. So that's why you want to keep all of those ingredients at room temperature.
So your eggs and your butter mm-hmm. need to be at room temperature.
Yes.
When you add them to the sugar and you do the creaming so that you have consistent bubbles in your cake.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need a consistent bubble in your cake?
It affects the texture quite a bit.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, because you want, like I say, it's the difference between basically a muffin and a cupcake is, well, the cake will have a lot more butter in it, basically. And so
cake is seems more dense.
It is.
Okay.
It is because it has that it's that smaller, tighter bubble structure,
mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have as much flour. So let's talk about gluten for a second, because this
okay,
is very important.
Okay, let's go
important.
To gluten.
when flour has two molecules called gluten and gliadin.
Okay.
And when those combine with water, it creates this stretchy material called gluten. And gluten is what holds together most of your baked products.
Okay.
So
gluten like glue.
Yes.
Okay.
And that is, in a muffin, you have, it's kind of a continuum. So you have cupcake on one end and bread on the other end. And cupcakes have almost no gluten and are very tender and very moist.
And have small bubbles.
And have very small bubbles.
Okay.
Whereas a bread, like a French bread, for example,
mm-hmm.
has a very strong gluten, very large bubbles, and, has the crunchy crust on
it. I am never going to look at baked goods the same again. I'm going
Excellent.
To be cracking things open like, oh, look at these bubbles.
That's right. And you can say, all right, so this probably only has so much gluten.
And now
so,
I'll know.
Mm-hmm. And
Fascinates
the difference,
me.
And the difference between a muffin and a cupcake is muffins made with the muffin method, where you take a relatively high amount of flour and you mix it very briefly with your wet ingredients until it just comes together. And so that forms a little bit of gluten in a wet dough, but with a decent amount of flour in there. And so when the bubbles form in there, they have more room to expand. Whereas the cake, like I said, is a lot more butter than it is, than in a muffin, and certainly much
yeah.
more than in a bread. So in order to get any rise at all, there has to be something that provides that space. And without having those bubbles seeded beforehand,
mm-hmm.
You're not going to get very much of a rise at all.
I have baked a flat cake before, so I know this is true.
All right.
And it's probably because I didn't use room temperature eggs. I mm-hmm. rarely do.
Yeah, or the room temperature butter if you hadn't brought that to temperature.
Usually I work on the butter okay, but the eggs, for some reason, I just grab them out of the fridge and throw them in, and so I can see why my cakes would come out flat.
So that could very well have been it.
We're talking over kitchen horror stories and how to fix mistakes.
And coming up, details on how you can find Brian Geiger online and tweet up or geek out with the Food Geek. Next on The Wendy Edwards Show.
I remember Wendy always with a smile and always willing to share whatever needed. I'm excited by what Wendy's doing because there are so many artists in this world that seem to get lost in the cracks or have difficulty finding a voice. Best about Wendy is her ability to interview people and to really look into the heart of the person and see what they're about as a human being, what it is in them that makes their art come to life.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I'm talking with Brian Geiger, who's bringing out the Food Geek in all of us by talking about kitchen horror stories that all of us run into. Brian writes for Fine Cooking Online, and he also writes for his own blog, foodgeek.com, and for ayearfromscratch.com. And we're delighted to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's a delight to be here.
Before the break, I had asked you if you could tell me another horror story so that those of us who feel like failures in the kitchen won't be so alone.
Well, this is a relatively simple thing, but it's I like it quite a bit. Someone had been making a lot of microwave oatmeal.
Okay.
And that's something I had covered on A Year From Scratch, is making your own microwave oatmeal.
Wait, so you're talking about those instant packets where you just add water to pop it in the microwave?
Mm-hmm.
There's your breakfast.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I had made a version of that for A Year From Scratch. And so someone said, oh, oatmeal. My oatmeal always boils over in the microwave. How do I stop that?
Okay.
And why does it happen? And so it's...
Even though they were following package directions?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So, and what happens is you have... let's step back a moment and talk about thickening.
Okay.
And starches. So when you make a gravy, for example... you will add some flour into the gravy,
mm-hmm.
and that will thicken up the water. And what happens there is the starch inside the flour absorbs water, and when it hits boiling temperature, it expands out.
Mm-hmm.
And when it expands out, it basically fills up all the space between the water, and it makes kind of a net. And that net is what thickens up the water. So the same sort of thing happens when you, for example, make pasta. If you've seen directions for pasta, a lot of times they say use a very large pot of water versus the amount of pasta that you have. And the reason they suggest that is because if you have a medium amount of water or something that you think would be enough to cover the pasta, then the starch inside the pasta will... basically, it leaches out during the cooking process, and because it's at boiling temperature, it will fill in all of that space. And because you have you're close to the top of the pot with the water, it will kind of, all those bubbles will form into larger bubbles being supported by that starch. So it will boil over,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want that. Well, the same sort of thing happens.
Tell that to my kitchen stove. Seriously.
Right. And so the same sort of thing will happen with oatmeal, is if you have a relatively small bowl for what you're putting the oatmeal in, and you cook it for so that it boils and gets
in the microwave.
Yeah, exactly. Then it will start to boil over. And there are a lot of factors there, but there are some ways where you can reduce the power of the microwave, was a reader suggestion for that, and cook it for longer. And that will keep it from actually boiling. It'll just have it at a hot temperature. But one of the tricks that you can do with pasta is that you can add a little oil onto the top of the
water.
On top of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that keeps the starch molecules from sticking together and forming those large bubble chains.
That bubble up over the top of your pan. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so what you can do with what you can do with oatmeal is that you can put some butter in the top of that. and that will basically do the same thing. Plus, you have the added advantage of it will make your oatmeal taste a lot better.
It will, however, if you're you can't be putting butter on your oatmeal. I'm working out. I'm trying to get in shape and be healthy. And
it is true.
So butter's not the enemy, but I don't know that I'd want it on the oatmeal.
Yes. Yes.
You know, if I had to use butter in my day, I'd plan it for something else. But I can see the advantage of having it there to prevent any spillage in the microwave.
Right.
And when you have spillage in the microwave, it's ugly.
Oh, it's terrible. And terribly difficult to clean. But like I say, you can use a lower temperature for longer time.
What about using a larger bowl?
You could use a larger bowl so it won't have as much of a chance to go out. So
I'm turning into a food geek sitting here talking with Brian Geiger.
That is exactly what I'm hoping
for. This is so much fun, and I appreciate that you're paying it forward by keeping your blog and writing for Fine Cooking and writing for A Year from Scratch. Now, you said you've worked on making your own version of instant oatmeal.
Yes.
That people can put in the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a simple recipe you can share with us right now?
It is tremendously simple.
What do you do?
You take some Quaker old-fashioned oats.
Mm-hmm.
They have instructions on the side for how much you would want to use for anything. You take a Ziploc bag or other zip-top bag. You scoop out the appropriate amount. You add in maybe a couple tablespoons of brown sugar. You can add in, tap in some cinnamon or whatever spices that you happen to want. But brown sugar, cinnamon is a classic combo.
Mm-hmm.
Put those in the bag, seal the bag.
Well, where's your gluten?
It's not the gluten, it's the starch that that causes the thing. And the oatmeal,
is the starch in the sugar?
The starch is in the oats.
In the oat?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what makes it all sticky?
Mm-hmm.
Is the oat.
Exactly. So, because the oats are a whole grain.
Okay.
So, when you...
Could you say it's a gluten-free meal for someone?
Let's see. Yeah, oats are...
What about the sugar, though?
No, there's only wheat flour has gluten.
Okay.
By and large.
Okay, so someone can have your version of oatmeal in the morning, and that's gluten-free, and just like making instant, but is it somehow better?
It is better insofar as you have complete control over what it is that you're making. It's also probably, instant oatmeal is not terribly expensive, but for what you can do, it's exactly what you want as far as the oatmeal.
It's cost effective.
It is. You're using larger ingredients. You're not using as much
like things you can buy in bulk. And when it comes down to individual packages, it would be cost effective.
Exactly.
Right.
And you know, you can use your own fresh spices if you want. And you can have different combinations of the oatmeal that you would not be able to get at the store.
What did you try when you made it?
Really, I went with classic. I went with brown sugar, cinnamon.
All right.
But I used some Vietnamese cassia, and it was very nice cinnamon.
Wait, what is that?
It's most cinnamon that you get in the United States is not real cinnamon. So real cinnamon tastes like Red Hots.
Right.
The cinnamon that you have on, that you get in the can, does not taste like Red Hots. It has a milder flavor and it's called cassia.
Okay.
And, that's what you have. So I have one of each type in the kitchen.
Where do you pick up your spices?
Depends. Sometimes around town, Whole Foods has a big bulk section. So it is generally very cost effective if you, to buy bulk spices rather than buying them in the jar, because you're not buying the jar.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you'll have better, they'll be fresher than they would be in the jar.
Okay.
But if I want something more exotic, Penzi's Spices, which is available online, or there's one in Richmond.
Okay.
You can go there.
Well, this is not what you normally do. And I know it's a hobby that's just turned into this amazing vocation for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or tell people what you do for your everyday job.
Right. My day job is I'm a systems designer for a small robotics company in town. So we primarily do a software framework for robotics, but some of our showcase projects have been, we've made some autonomous self-driving vehicles for the DARPA challenges. We are also working with Neil Young on making a low emissions 1958 Lincoln Continental convertible.
Nice.
Yes. And
very
that's a fun little project. project too.
I bet that
is called Linkvolt.
A fun little project Neil Young. Tough to be you, Brian.
It is tough, especially with all the pie.
Tell me, how did you go from working in robotics to becoming the food geek?
It's the simplest thing in the world. I started doing it. I've always been kind of interested in food, and you know, I cooked with my mom and all that sort of thing.
Is your mom a good cook?
Yes. Cool. Yes. And I've enjoyed it, but it's always been sort of a, you know, follow the recipe or try something crazy, or, you know, there wasn't a lot of method to it.
And you wanted to get into the details?
Yeah, and so what happened, the big turning point was when I saw the television show Good Eats.
Okay.
And that is really...
Who you remind me of.
Yes.
Alton Brown.
And I have based a lot of what I've done. You know, he's been a big inspiration. So he brings in the science, he brings in the history, and he shows how everything works all together. And that's when it finally clicked, is that food isn't just something that happens. There are reasons behind
it. It's science.
Exactly. And so I was able to, once I started understanding that there could be a why and started understanding some of the whys, that kind of did it. So I basically started my own website, thefoodgeek.com, and I just started writing about it, because a lot of times the best way to learn something is to teach it.
Right. Okay.
So, and that's where that kind of came in. And then at one point I had gotten an email from an editor at Fine Cooking saying, "Hey, would you like to write a column?" And I said, "Absolutely. I would love to write a column."
So they just bumped into your blog.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice.
It was great. And so, yeah, I basically fell into it. And then Twitter came along, and that helped a lot, because it really allows people to find people who are of similar interests.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, thank you for sharing your passion and paying it forward.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, can you tell me, or could you maybe share a message with other people who may be sitting at home not realizing that they do have a gift?
Yes. The best thing you can do is if you enjoy something and you think it's at all worthwhile, try to help other people see what that is and try to help them do it. That's one of the other little small projects that I did last year. Was I had a teacher neighbor to cook week. And because sometimes, you know, watching things on TV and reading books are not enough, especially with cooking. So I encouraged people to go out and find a neighbor and say, "Hey, are you, you know, would you like to learn how to cook something?" And brought them to teach and learn how to do things that you can't necessarily learn very well from just watching it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that way you can just share some time with your neighbor too and get to know each other a little better.
Exactly.
And have a nice afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
It is.
So whenever you've got this creative thought that something comes up in your head like, "Hey, we should do this," you know, would you say, Brian, it's fair to just go for it and not worry about what other people are going to think? Because I think a lot of times people get creative ideas, but they either immediately shut them down or they allow other people to shut them down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's kind of an idea that's floated in the minds of people that it's the idea that's the important thing.
And so it's about finding a way to make that idea.
Yeah, it's ideas are quick and cheap, and people think if I only come up with the idea of the thing to do, then I will have it made. And so they wait for that right idea, and maybe they don't think that the idea that's come across is the idea.
Or they may not feel equipped to do it.
Right.
But there are ways you can pull it together.
Yeah, yeah. And nowadays, especially if it's an information communication idea or something, the cost of doing that is negligible now. It used to be if you wanted to, you know, become a musician, for example, that would play music for people or whatever, it would cost, you know, thousands upon tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. And that's just not true anymore. You just go and you start up a little website and you write about it, or you record a song and you put it out there, you make a YouTube video or whatever it is that's interesting to you. Just go ahead and do it and try it. And the worst thing that's going to happen, and this is going to be weird, the worst thing that's going to happen is it's not going to work.
I have been and done this myself. I started a little blog about what women want. I started, I don't know, just a bunch of different things that I've done over time. But I feel with the Wendy Edwards Show, I found my niche, I've got my voice, and now I know what I'm doing.
Excellent.
But it took that trial and error to get to this point, and creative ideas that, yeah, may seem a little loopy to other people. But when I put it out there, I found that the community really did just come out and supported me, and even in those things that didn't go through.
Right. Yeah, and it's just not, it doesn't hurt to fail.
Not at all. It teaches you a lot.
It does.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here so much. And thank you again for paying it forward to our community through your websites and through your intellect and education.
It was my pleasure. It's like I say, the best way to learn is to teach. So that's
I'm glad you're out there teaching.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's listen to Sarah Blacker.
I've been driving through it all, trying everything at least once, but oh, every time the beauty crept, oh, blinked an even easier way to get back. It all blinded only by the sun, but oh, every time the vision left, oh, comes an even easier way to paint it black. Get black before they get gray, and then get black again. They might get white, so try as you may to keep on driving. If you can. To get back, and oh, every time the vision left, oh, comes an even easier way to paint it black, paint it black, paint it black.